but I thought you might be comforted by the allusion you did. Larimore turns toward the door. Come. Dante squinted against the modest lantern light of the hall. After a single day in the room, it already felt strange to walk about relatively free, qualified only by Larimore, the sheathed swords of the guards who followed him, the walls of the keep, the hundreds of soldiers within it, the walls around the keep, and, he supposed, his own need to stay here until Samarand lay dead at his feet. He stumbled, and a guard put a hand on his back. He shrugged it away. His heart railed against his ribs. Samarand, face to face. He felt certain he could take her life if he sacrificed his own. Why had all this fallen on him? They ascended to the entry hall, and Larimore strode straight back to the sets of doors at the far end of the room. A few soldiers and well-dressed men glanced their way. Into a hallway, through another couple doors, a tight spiral staircase. Dante stopped counting steps after 100. Larimore turned off to a landing, a short distance from the top. Dante smiled at the heavy breathing of the others. He was winded, but not badly. All that running away had been good for something, after all. From there they entered a sort of fore-hall, thick black rugs on the stone floor, weavings and paintings on the walls, elegant sculpture of the same make he'd seen on the temples within the city. They passed a window of purified glass, and Dante stopped short. Below him lay the yard, and the walls, and the open street, and beyond that, across a yawning gap of empty space, the upthrust steeple of the Cathedral of Ivars soared into the sky. For all their height and the keep, a full two-thirds of the church's spire towered above them. Dante was beginning to understand just how big the world was, but surely Ivar's was the tallest thing man had ever built. Behind it, the dead city stretched for miles through swathes of grey and white stone, river-like streets, black fringes of pines growing frequent between the first and second walls, and thickly enough to resemble a forest in the crumbling fringes of the outermost city. To his north, he could see the grey waters of the bay, the tree-painted arms of land holding it in place, the silvery line of a river feeding it and coursing off to the southeast. It was early-ish morning, he saw, 8 or 9 o'clock. He'd spent closer to 20 hours locked up than 12. Enough goggling, Larimore said. Dante pulled himself from the window and hurried to catch up. They drew up in front of a solid-looking set of doors, and Larimore rapped his knuckles against the wood. A woman's voice filtered through the door. With a distant thrill, Dante realized he understood the foreign words. Come in. The room was close, warmed and lit by a hearth at its far end. Samarand was seated in front of it, turned toward the door. She folded up a book on her lap and looked up. Her gaze caught on Dante a moment, then she smiled at Larimore, who walked forward and bobbed his head. They exchanged a few words, and Dante's comprehension of the Gascon by way of Narashtovic evaporated. He shifted his feet as their talk wore on. Samarand laughed regularly, pressing her hand to the base of her throat. His eyes settled on the hollow there, the white, fragile skin. He imagined slitting it, gathering the nether and caving in her face. If he made the room go black first, he could probably do the same to Larimore and the armsmen before they could stop him. He was more dangerous than they gave him credit. Dante Galland, Samarand said, standing and facing him. Her voice was soft, but carried a current of command. Her words were malish, but accented with the thick consonants of Gask speech, an influence he hadn't heard when she'd given her sermon. He met her eyes. I'm sorry you spent so long in that cell. I was out. My fault, Larimore agreed, smiling. She gave him a look, and he gathered his men and bowed out through the door. "It was at least a step more civil than all those times you tried to kill me," Dante said, managing to keep his voice level. "I've never seen you before today." "In the fields, coming for the book. Did I pass your test? Was I ever out in those fields with you? Whose men were they then?" She shook her head, gaze steady. "This isn't why I brought you here." She nodded to a chair across from hers. He fell into it, leaning his head against its high back. "I bet the others were grateful for the chance to prove themselves," he said. She just smiled. He found it maddening. "It's easy to forget," she said. "When Larimore tells me of all the things you've done, you're still a child." He let that go. "The others were angry, too. They didn't understand at first, but the same drive that brought them to the book gave them the vision for what they could become. Two of them are present members of our council." "Is that an offer?" She laughed again, then touched her fingers to her lips. "You've made things difficult for me. I'd like you with us. We need talent now more than ever, but I need that book." Dante made himself sigh. "I told Larimore, the book I gave Nak is the same one I found in that temple." "Indeed." She leaned back in her chair. She could have been discussing the health of a distant relative. He readied himself to reach for the nether. "I suppose you've already made up your mind." "Why would I have done that?" She frowned, showing the wrinkles around her mouth. "This isn't a formality. I wanted to see you for myself." He narrowed his eyes. "Is Blaze safe?" "Your friend is fine. I want to see him." She lifted one gray-flecked brow. "If it turned out I'd killed him, what would you do about it? Try to kill me?" "That would be suicide," he said evenly. "Here and now, you and I are in this room," she said, with the same easy power with which she'd given her sermon. "It's high and isolated. The doors are shut. I have one question. Do you want the knowledge I can offer?" His hands tightened on the chair's arms. "Yes." Her blue eyes skipped between his. "Then give me the book." "Look at these," he said, pointing his fingers so close to his eyes he might poke them out. "And know, I'm telling the truth when I say I've given you everything I have." She stared at him the way you'd stare at a scorpion while deciding whether to crush it or leave it be, and he felt a flickering around his mind. He jerked his head, then made his mind go as blank as when he sought to channel the nether. "Burn in hell," he thought, but he saw no recognition across her face. "You're a snake," she said, freezing his blood, "but I see no lie in your eyes." "Finally! Now maybe I can get back to my lessons. Heavens forbid I infringe on your time. Is that how you aspire to spend it? With grammar and vocabulary?" "I need to know those things," Dante frowned. "You all speak more than one language." "Yes, we're wise enough to know the world's a large place, and good for us. But you didn't travel all this way in hopes of learning your letters. I'm inclined to agree." Dante leaned forward, trying to keep his eyes guarded. "Meaning? If these were ideal circumstances, we'd be in no hurry to rush things along," she said, lifting the corners of her lips at what she saw in his face.
"But they're not, and we do. You'll continue your lessons with Nak, but we've got a lot of work and not enough hands to get it done.
Larimore will make use of you with some tasks more suitable to your skills than copying conjugation tables. What kind of tasks? She gave an ironic tilt to her head. Trust my great wisdom will see they're matched to your abilities and temperament. I'm not interested in wasting either of our time on tests. Dante nodded, considering her placid face. He'd have training both formal and experiential. In the employ of her most trusted servant. A chance to at once realize his talents and stay close enough to find the right moment to strike her down. He couldn't have asked for more. He knew this was no fortunate turn of a die, though. He had made this thing happen.
Through wit and will, he'd put himself in position to receive this offer.
He wouldn't squander it. I accept. Excellent, she smiled, appearing genuinely pleased. Dante still hadn't seen the violence and radicalism Khalid claimed she'd ridden to power. For a brief moment, he wondered if the old man might have been wrong, if the Samarrant he'd known years ago had let age temper her ambition with wisdom. People did change, he thought. He wasn't the boy he'd been 3 months ago. He'd become potent in a way he'd imagined would take years, had done things he never would have dared on his own. If he could reforge his personality so much in 3 months, what could Samarrant have done in 20 years? Perhaps, when she'd gotten the wants of her heart, she'd mellowed, satisfied with her power and her place. You won't be seeing much of me, of course, Samarrant went on. I've got a lot to do beyond holding the hands of all those administrators who keep writing me for money and troops. She nodded at her desk, overflowing with signet-stamped letters. Larimore will tell you whatever we need done. Grow strong. We'll need you soon enough. He nodded, dazed. She stood, and he did too. He wondered if he was supposed to bow. He offered a kind of deep nod, and when the guards escorted him from her chambers, he knew it wasn't to control his path, but to protect him. Why didn't you do it then? Blaze asked when they had a moment alone. He had a bruise high on his cheek and a cut across his nose, but he looked to be in one piece. We'd have been killed, Dante said simply. He rubbed his eyes and looked up from a pile of Nack's notes. We can't do this like we've done all the rest. We need a plan, a real one. Yeah, Blaze nodded, letting his heels bounce against the side of the desk he was sitting on. Was she as nice in person as at her sermon? There's something about her. She's seductive. That's disgusting! Not like that, Dante said, face going red. He shoved Blaze. Wait, let's not rule this out, Blaze said, righting himself on the desk. We can use this. First, you flatter and sweet-talk your way into her confidence. Then, when the moment is right, you use that sharp tongue of yours to— Shut up! Dante shoved him again. How had they started talking about this? I mean, she has a way with people. She's a leader of men. If she's like Kelly said, then she hides it well. Well, I see how little it takes to win you over, Blaze said, eyes lingering on Dante's neck. Dante touched the cold clasp on his collar, the badge Larimore had given him after his talk with Samarrant, a silver ring around a simple, stylized, seven-branched tree. This is how I'm going to keep close to her. Closer than a private audience? This lets us choose the moment when, Dante said. That gives us the power. He moved across the room to their one window. They told me they'd assigned you an instructor from the soldiers. You'll be with me on our assignments. Blaze tapped his finger on the desk, then leaned forward, elbows on knees. Just what are these errands anyway? I don't know, Dante said. Things they need done. They found out soon enough. Larimore appeared the next afternoon to interrupt Nack's lesson with a tersely worded order about a man spotted in the ruins beyond the outer wall. He wanted Dante to bring him in.
Why?
Because I'm telling you to.
That time-honored logic.
Because, Larimore said, tugging his collar forward, he used to be one of our acolytes.
Not fond of those who leave the fold? Dante said, judging he still had some play to his rope.
Not fond of those who leave it with their pockets sagging with our property.
Larimore tapped Dante's badge. Nor is it particularly pleasing when they make a point of lurking about and robbing our monks when they're out on their business. Stealing from men of peace. What is this world coming to?
Dante nodded, mollified.
Should I know anything about him?
Dark hair, queued, bearded, in fact a general mess. You'll know he's been on the streets a while. Name's Ryan Briggs.
I meant of a less tangible nature.
Larimore laughed, met his eyes. Scared?
No,
Dante said. He picked up his sword belt.
Well, what can he do?
Minor talents. Nothing you can't handle.
Want him in one piece?
Would be nice. Larimore shrugged. But denial of men's desires is the god's way of saying hello.
Dante nodded, buckling his sword around his waist.
He'll be yours by nightfall.
I hope you're cognizant of the irony here, Blaze said after Dante'd found him trading blows with one of the soldiers in the yard and explained their job.
I'm cognizant. Remember why we're here.
You'd do well to do the same.
Dante shook his head.
They crossed the yard to the small door at the other side of the citadel's walls, the only other exit from the place, a door far less ostentatious than the main gates, but thick as his palm was wide, and set in a passage too narrow to swing a sword. The sunlight flashed on the icon on his collar, and the door's guards let them by. They strode east into the city, toward the fringes. Citizens' eyes lingered on Dante and the silver at his neck as he brushed by. He gazed straight ahead, a faint thrill of rank and recognition tickling his nerves. It had snowed the night before, and their boots slid on the ice-slick cobbles. They passed under the inn gate to the shabbier, less peopled buildings between it and the gappy ring of the Pride Gate. So named, Nack had told him in a brief break from the endless language lessons, because in all the times the city had been sacked, no man who defended its outer walls had ever abandoned them, except to be thrown in a coffin. Much of the city was still a mystery to Dante. He hadn't been outside the citadel since the day he'd given them the fake copy of the cycle, but the keep and the church were landmark enough to keep his direction, even with the sun hidden behind a screen of clouds. The ground sloped down between the two sets of walls before leveling out in front of the Pride Gate, threatening to yank itself from under their feet with every step into the snow. It was easy to forget, behind the thick stone of the sealed citadel and among the bustling crowds behind the inn gate, that so much of the city was wrecked, forgotten, neglected, peopled by the lost and the landless and the outcast, when it was peopled at all. Dante paused in the street just past the outer walls. Birdsong and single footsteps trickled through the rubble and the pines. Behind him, far-carrying notes of shopmen crying prices, hammers shaping steel.
"We were rats recently enough," Dante said, gazing over the houses in their various states of decay. Larimore said he'd been seen in this quarter.
"If you were a rat, where would you hide from our soldiers?"
"A basement to hide my light," Blaze said. He sucked his teeth. "Or the second floor of a place where the stairs had caved in. If someone came for me in my sleep, I'd hear them scrabbling around before they could get up to me."
Dante nodded, impressed, but didn't say so.
They made a few circles of the weed-choked streets, examining the houses with fresh litter or footprints in the yellowed grass and snow-patched dirt, spooking a few grimy men ensconced in their filth in single, underfurnished rooms. In the sixth or seventh house of their search, they saw a tuft of long black hair beneath a blanket. Dante called their quarry's name. Got no response. He walked toward the man and nudged him with his boot. Stiff. Blaze took out his sword. Dante knelt and pulled back the blanket. The body's cheek looked bruised where it rested on the dirt floor, its open eyes dull and glassy. Dante shook his head. When twilight came, the hour of roaming, they returned to the gateless gap in the wall and sank down against the stone, watching the shadowy figures of men in the distance. Footsteps echoed from the other side of the walls, and they put their hands on their weapons. A blond man walked through, eyes darting to the scrape of swords being put away. He hurried into the growing gloom. "Are they going to string you up if you don't find the guy?"
"They'll probably start with you," Dante said. "Give me something to think about for next time."
"I'd give them something to think about," Blaze said. He picked up a stick and flipped his wrist in a tight circle, stabbing at the air.
"Been learning much?"
"A bit," Blaze said. "They don't fight as dirty as Robert showed me."
Dante grinned. He hadn't thought of Robert in days. "Then they won't be expecting it when we make our move."
"Nor will I at this rate."
Dante put a finger to his lips. More boot steps, slowing as they approached the walls, as if the wearer were nearing the end of his journey. The man began whistling. In the day's last light, Dante saw a bristle-bearded man emerge from the wall into the dirty street. A light, steady wind tossed locks of black hair over his eyes and nose. Dante let him get a ways down the street, then stood and moved to cut off the way back inside the gates, Blaze half a step behind him.
"Ryan Briggs," he called in the husky, cheerful voice Larimore liked to use when he was delivering bad news. The man spun, his smile freezing on his lips.
"Who are you?" he said in Malish, which came as only a mild surprise. His name was Southern.
He squinted at the pair. Dante edged forward, falling out of the long shadow of the wall and into the soft light of dusk. Ryan's gaze dropped to his neck.
"A trained dog? Can you play dead?"
"My name is Dante Galland. You're to come with me."
"And you're to kiss my puckered ass,"
Ryan said, face gone tight.
His left hand lowered to the short sword on his right hip.
"I wouldn't," Blaze said. "They'll give me much worse at the Citadel."
"You've been robbing monks," Dante said. He took another step.
"I had a brother in Bressel,"
Ryan said, and Dante stopped short to hear the city's name.
"I say had, because I learned he died on the road a few weeks ago. Killed in a skirmish."
He glanced beyond the wall to the hulking mass of cathedral and citadel miles deeper into the city.
"Surely you've read the scriptures," he said, returning his eyes to Dante's. "Do you remember the part where they compel the church to drag the innocent into its squabbles?"
"What's happening in Bressel?"
Blaze said. His hands hung at his sides, empty for the moment.
"For all their talk, these people can't take the city,"
Ryan spat. It was like he'd been waiting for them, Dante saw, had been stewing in his reasons with no audience to which he could explain them.
"So they camp in the woods and ambush the nobles and guildsmen and clergy and soldiers whenever they leave the walls. The sure sign of God's on your side when you're forced to squat in the woods like a cur. They say the people are remembering the old ways, though, that they're joining the fight. For all I know, Bressel's burnt by now."
The boys looked at each other for a long moment. They'd speculated sometimes on how things were going in the south, but no one had been able to give them any real news.
Dante wanted to press for more, but Ryant would be in the hands of the Citadel soon. Might say anything to ease his time if he were put to the knife or the boots. Could even, unlikely as it may seem, speak about the boy's unnatural interest in the events of their homeland. "Unbuckle your blade and come with us," Dante said to Ryant. "They may find mercy when they hear your story, but if you try to run or resist, I'll grant you none." "Yeah, go on, do as you're told." "You don't know a thing about why I'm here," Dante said. He tensed himself. Ryant smiled with half his mouth. "I know enough," the man said. He pinched his fingers together, and the boys were swallowed in pure blackness. Blaze's sword rang out from somewhere behind Dante. He drew his own and heard boots pounding away from them. "Careful," Dante said, then ran after the sound of the man's feet, clenching his teeth at the blind plunge over uneven ground. He managed not to trip and dashed free of the shadow sphere and into the sudden brightness of twilight. Ryan's disappeared around the rough edge corner of a house a score of yards ahead. The boys sprinted after him, making a wide turn around the house in case he'd planted himself against its wall in waiting. Up ahead, Ryan glanced over his shoulder and slipped in the snow, cursing as he bounced against the ground. He hauled himself up before he'd finished falling, faltered on his right ankle, then cursed again and ran on with little drop in speed. Dante closed to 20 feet. Ryant weaved through pines, ducking branches. A foot-high fragment of what had once been a full wall sprawled out in front of him, and he vaulted it, crying out as his feet hit frozen dirt. He popped up, jogging backwards, and waved a hand at Dante. Fire whooped up, and Dante bent double, hand trailing the ground to steady himself. A strange anger took him. As if it were somehow offensive this man should try to kill him in order to save his own life. And Dante blanked his thoughts and wrapped the nether around Ryan's body in the opposite trick of what Gabe had shown him. Ryan's legs froze up, and he toppled forward, sliding face first through the snow. Dante approached quickly, Blaze circling to his right. Dante dug his knee into the man's back and yanked his arms behind him. He bound his hands and elbows tight with the rope he'd taken for his task, leaving Ryan's legs unsecured. Let him walk his own self all that way. He gave the knots at the man's wrists another tug. "I'm going to let you up now," Dante panted. "And if you try anything other than walking exactly where I tell you, I'll reduce you to a fine red mist." Ryan only gurgled in reply, his throat caught by Dante's shadowy grip. Dante let the nether fall away, feeling its reluctance to part, its primal urge to clench Ryan's throat until his breath stopped. Freed, the man gagged, gasped, curled up as his body rediscovered it could move. Dante gave him a moment to regain his wind, then grabbed the ropes around his arms and, with Blaze's help, hauled him to his feet. "I'm going to curse your name the instant before they trim my thread," Ryan said, still half-choked. "One morning, you'll wake up dead and never live again. Or maybe your arm will go black and drop off. Or maybe it won't be your arm, it'll be—" "Get moving," Dante said, shoving him in the back. Ryan had twisted his ankle in his first fall, and the progress was slow. Blaze took point, cloak thrown back over his left shoulder to keep his sword visible. Dante walked behind Ryan, eyes on anyone who drew too close while he kept his mind open to any surge of shadow from their prisoner. "You can still let me go," Ryan said, when they were waved through the inn-gate after Dante'd shown the wall guard his badge. The city lay under full dark by then, lit by sporadic lanterns outside public houses and at the more major street corners,
and by the weak aid of the moon through an overcast sky.
"Be quiet," Dante said. "Look in your heart. I haven't hurt a soul.
That's more than can be said for them.
Boo-hoo, Blaze said from over his shoulder.
It isn't a matter of justice, Dante said.
What then?
Ryan pressed, trying to catch Dante's eye. Dante shoved him forward again.
Do you like to hear men beg? Is that what tightens your trousers? The sound of a man's voice who knows he's at your power?
Shut up, Dante said. He grabbed the knots at Ryan's wrists and twisted them so the ropes cut into his skin. Ryan cried out softly.
You don't know a damned thing.
The man went quiet. From there, like the prisoners Dante'd seen brought up to the crooked tree outside Wetton, even Blaze and Robert themselves, Ryan was docile, following their course without speaking, accepting orders of movement with a downturned face.
Why did they do that? Why didn't Ryan try to kill him?
Did the man's dead brother mean so little to him? For that matter, how was robbing monks supposed to honor his memory? It made as little sense as whatever divine scheme had necessitated his brother's death in the first place, or why the House of Aron had ever had to face the third scour, or why Dante had been chosen to stop a war he couldn't be certain was unjust. He felt no pity for Ryant. So the man had snapped awake enough to see something was wrong. Bully for him. All he'd done with that fresh vision was skulk around the ruins, taking pennies from those who'd wronged him.
Dante's own ambition was no less than the killing of the Order's head.
If, as Gabe believed, even that was no guarantee for any kind of change, what chance did a man like Ryant have to make some sense of his life? No wonder he didn't struggle when it came time to give it up.
Dante bore his prisoner to the eastern door from which he and Blaze had set out, and hailed the guards with his name. They opened it, and led Dante's troop single file down the dark passage through the citadel's walls, the entry being too narrow to comfortably walk shoulder to shoulder. Not content with that precaution, the passage's interior was lined with holes meant for firing arrows and stabbing pikes at anyone with the right combination of strength and stupidity to try to force their way through it.
Perhaps they could kill her, Dante thought, and then just walk on out under color of Larimore's errands.
On the other hand, what was the hurry? Who said killing her would solve anything? Couldn't he see a while longer to his training with Nak,
while he worked out a safer route to the process of transmuting Samaran's living body into a rotting corpse?
Excellent, Larimore said when he saw the three waiting for him inside the keep's main hall. He tucked his lower lip beneath his upper teeth and grinned, nose sticking out like a fox's.
That room downstairs has been feeling a touch empty since you left it. It'll be glad to once more be a home.
He tried to set me on fire, Dante said.
Larimore's eyes flicked up and down his form.
You don't smell burnt.
He spoke orders in Gascon to a pair of guards, and they led silent Ryant away. He turned back to Dante, who lingered in the hall, uncertain what he was expecting.
Well done. If only we'd had you to send after yourself.
We'd still have gotten away, Blaze said.
Probably, Larimore said. He raised an eyebrow their way.
What are you waiting for? A knighthood? Get off to sleep. Busy days ahead.
He strode away into the belly of the keep,
probably to let Samarand know of the capture.
A strange pride crept across Dante's chest as he exited to the yard. He'd done the service of the enemy, but he had done it well. An average man-at-arms would have died to Ryan's simple sorcery. In his brief time in the citadel, Dante had vaulted from a life of self-education and fleeing for his life to one of formal, rigorous instruction and meaningful work. He could be important here, he knew. He was already useful in a manner he'd never been. Nak thought he was bright, if occasionally too aware of it.
Already Larimore trusted him enough to give him tasks beyond the grasp of 99 men out of 100. With no other obligation splitting his focus and loyalty, Dante felt certain he could one day have been one of the 12 men on the council. But he would have to give that up for the well-being of his homeland, a place that banned the light of Aron, and had recently tried to execute Blaze and Robert, two of his only friends. He could see no way in which that was fair. For all those thoughts, as he returned to his cell in the chapel, he could see nothing more than the slump of Ryan's shoulders, his slack face, the hollows of his eyes as he disappeared into the dungeons. Ryan probably thought the wrong done unto him was the rightful price of his resistance. He was probably even so vain as to think there was some meaning to whatever would be done to him next, whether it was torture and execution, or no more than interminable imprisonment. Well, Ryan was an idiot. Either way, he'd be forgotten. Just one more body in a city already choked with the yards of the dead. His brother was gone, and now he would be too. That was the way of things, Dante decided. With the gods and the stars so far removed from human matters, the only justice to be found was what you took for yourself. Chapter 15. By morning he learned language with Nag, and by evening they trained with the Nether. Dante's methods were undisciplined, Nag noted, crude, if effective, and the monk showed him cleaner paths to channel the Nether, and more closely bend it to his thoughts.
"Most men have to struggle with every step of this, you know," Nag said in mild confusion, after Dante had mastered another lesson on his third attempt. "You fly through it like a bolt. It's less like I'm teaching than I'm revealing things your mind already knows."
They worked in the cold of the open yard beside the chapel, filling the space with shadows and light, with bursts of flame that melted the snows on the grounds, and spikes of force that could crack small rocks. When soldiers suffered injuries in training or in scuffles in the streets, they were brought to the chapel, and Nak showed him the proper methods of mending flesh and bone. Through all his education, the bald priest made no mention of the peculiar talents of Jack Hand and the few men like him mentioned in the cycle. It was as if death, for as much as the prayers and the studies of the priests and acolytes of Aron centered on the life after life, were a thing beyond them, the one depth forbidden to be plumbed. It was a blind spot, Dante saw, a thing he could exploit. Larimore came to him with a new task most every day, and Dante'd cease his lessons with Nak to deliver sealed letters across town and wait for a hastily scribbled reply, to place orders with smiths and tailors, to escort priests and monks and nobles and ambassadors through the danger of the city to the relative peace of the wilds, to tail emissaries and messengers from other cities and lands, and see to whom they spoke, away from the eyes of the sealed citadel. Once he was sent to capture another man, and when the man drew his blade instead of letting himself be tied, Dante struck open his guts with a thrust of his hand. He left the body where it fell and went back to the keep to let them know to send a team if they wanted to pick it up. A week into this routine, Blaze asked again about Samarand, about their true purpose, and Dante answered him like before. In time. He kept his eyes and ears open, as he did Larimore's bidding, and between gossip at the keep and the fragments of conversation he could understand from the well-dressed men bearing the colors of lords and territories all throughout Garsk and beyond, he began to piece together that something was coming to a head. The council factored heavily in this intrigue, meeting frequently behind closed doors high up in the keep. More doors opened to Dante by the day. He'd had a reputation before he'd arrived at the citadel, he discovered, based on the gruesome tendency for none of the men dispatched to kill him to ever be heard from again. and as he carried out Larimore's will in the field, it only grew. He was grimly efficient, they said, already more talented than half the priests who weren't on the council, cold and harsh as sunlight glinting from the snow. He was on the rise. Nothing was shut to his blend of ambition and ability. Nothing, for now, but the doors to the council. He learned the Citadel's regular orders for weapons were being sent to the city smiths rather than their own forges, which were busy dealing with the bricks of silver as big as his forearm that disappeared behind their walls each day. Dante explored and lingered as much as he dared, intentionally losing himself in the twisting halls of the keep so that, when the time came to still Samaran's heart, he could flee the halls without a wasted step. Priests and guards sometimes caught him in places he had no strict business to be in, and he'd lie about an errand of Samaran's hand, or walk on by without a word, as if he were too wrapped up in his latest responsibilities to even notice their questions and turned faces. Once he'd learned the general lay of the keep, he started waking earlier, finding excuses to slip away from Nak and walk alone in its halls, in the hopes of at last hearing the details of whatever they prepared for, and perhaps, though Dante didn't think it outright, to hear something that would push him into completing the task Callie had sent him here for. When he delivered letters, he crowded close to their recipients, daring glances at their responses as they wrote them. He was cutting it close, he knew. He was earning their trust, but he was still an outsider. He wasn't certain they'd believed him about the book, and if they hadn't, why they were giving him so much rope. Sometimes, when he heard Larimore's laughter, it no longer sounded innocent, at least as innocent as Larimore could claim to be, but scored with an undercurrent of scorn, as if the man could see the treachery hidden in Dante's heart. The slightest noise could make him start like a rabbit. His nerves were getting too frayed to maintain his double purpose. If he couldn't breach the council doors in person, perhaps he could do it by proxy. The sealed citadel was secured against the intrusion of men, but wasn't meant to keep out rats. The night before the next council was scheduled, he lay awake in bed until the chapel was long silent, then crept out to the pantry. He waited no more than a minute before the dark blot of a rat wriggled across the floor in search of crumbs. Dante snapped its neck with a brief flicker of nether, then surrounded it with a stronger hand of shadows, and reanimated it as he'd done in the past. He closed his eyes, and saw the pantry from its alien perspective, so near to the ground. Heart racing, he opened the front door of the chapel and sent the beast scurrying toward the keep. Its doors were shut firm, and Dante had to wait for half an hour before someone opened them on a midnight errand. He made the rat run inside, head swimming as the ground rushed past its nose. He kept it tight to the walls of the main hall, eyes out for guards. A few stood watch, faces hooded by gloom, but either they had no interest in vermin or were sleeping on their feet, for his rat made it to the corridors beyond the hall without drawing their attention. He sent it down the passageways he'd memorized in his wanderings, running from doorway to doorway, pausing to listen for the sound of footfalls. Would the priests be able to sense its intrusion? But saw no more than one stock-still guard before it reached the stairwell to the upper floors. The dead rat leapt tirelessly from one step to the next, clambering ever upward, until, at last, it reached the seventh-floor landing, where they held their council. The hallway was silent, still, lit by a single lantern. The doors of their chamber were open. Dante willed the rat inside, then sent it snuffling around the room's edges until he found a crack in the stone just wide enough to lodge its body and look out on the dark blurs of the great table and its chairs. The task had taken no more than an hour. But he was exhausted, and despite his pulsing nerves, he fell asleep within minutes of hitting the bed. Dante woke an hour after dawn, and drew breath so sharply he choked on his own spit. He sat upright, muffling his cough to keep from disturbing Blaze, then closed his eyes and sought the sight of the rat. Sunlight diffused through a north-facing window, illuminating the same furniture he'd seen by the darkness of the previous night. It remained empty of people, but as Dante went about his breakfast, and then his morning grammar lessons with Knack, he'd briefly shut his eyes and catch glimpses of servants sweeping the room, straightening the sashes on the windows, lighting candles along the walls. In still-framed flashes, he'd watched the council chamber grow tidied for its use. Knack was grilling him on Narashtivic verb tenses he hadn't yet mastered, and in his frustration, Dante let 20 minutes pass without checking on his spy. He rubbed his eyes, and with a shock to his heart, saw robed men seated at the table, heard tense voices arguing their points. "This isn't something we should be trying to hasten," he heard Samarand say in her slightly accented Malish. "I'm not going to risk a false step for the sake of shaving off a few days."
"But every day we spend on our haunches is one more day we give them to prepare,"
a man's voice said, in an accent so thick it was a moment before Dante could make sense of the words.
"And what are you doing about them? How is it they're able to prepare so close to our city?" a third voice says.
"Enough, Tarkon," Samarand put in. "You know we're spread too thin to root them out right now. We'll lure them to us in the open field, then break their spine then."
Dante heard Knack clear his throat, and he scrambled to reply to the priest's obscure linguistic query, only to get it wrong. Knack threw up his hands and sighed, and as he repeated his lesson for the third or fourth time, Dante divided his attention between his bald teacher and the conversation high up in the keep, only to find it had turned to an over-specific discussion of payments due for the maintenance of their soldiers.
"What's going on in that head of yours?"
Knack snapped, leaning in so close his nose was 6 inches from Dante's.
"This may not be so exciting as Larimore's little ventures, but it's just as important to your education, dammit."
"I know," Dante said, rubbing his eyes again. "It just feels like I'm making so little progress."
"You're doing fine," Knack said. "Better than fine. Your fundamentals are sound. No one can learn a new language overnight."
"All this waiting is killing me," Dante said.
Knack furrowed his brow at the boy, lifted himself from his seat.
"Tell you what," he said. "Take a break while I go fetch us some tea."
"Okay," Dante said.
Without pausing to wonder what tea, he was plunged back into the vision of the rat. The council was still going on about the finances of the soldiers. Did they usually talk about things like that? Or was it the prelude to military action? From the rat's vantage and the crack in the wall, he could see no more than a few slippered feet and the hunched backs of old men. He leaned his senses forward, as if that would somehow shine light on everything that was now obscured. Why were such important people talking about such trivial things?
"I sense," he heard Samarand say, then cut herself short.
There was a shuffling of robes, a moment of silence.
"What is it?" one of the men said.
"Nothing. Pardon my interruption, Baxter."
The conversation resumed. Dante slapped absently at the back of his neck, thinking he felt a fly. A hot prickle ran across his scalp, and he realized it wasn't his nerves he felt, but the rats on the other end of the connection. At once he could sense her, the way you can sense the presence of a person in an unlit room. She had found the rat, felt the nether that kept it on its feet, was now tracing whatever line tied it to Dante as delicately as a spider climbs down its web when it knows there's something large stuck in the far end. Dante jerked himself away from the rat, some part of him registering he'd also jerked back in his chair. But that cord held fast. Samarand's presence surged forward.
Dante stood and cast about the chapel reading room as if looking for a physical axe with which to cut the connection, feeling her cold intelligence dropping down the line ever closer. Then, with an exertion of will so forceful it made sweat stand up on his forehead, he took a breath, cleared his mind, gazed on that needle-thin shadow that bound him to the rat. He severed it quickly and cleanly, heard a sharp question from Samaran's consciousness, then darkness and softness. Nothing more than his own five senses. He stood there a while, half dazed, trying not to move for fear it would somehow draw her back to him, and this time identify him. He couldn't remember a time he'd tried anything more stupid.
"What's the matter?" Nack said, returning to the room with a copper tray bearing a kettle of something that smells like land leaves. "You have the look of a man who just tried to puke up a live horse."
"What?" Dante said.
"Maybe. I mean, maybe it was something I ate."
"We'll sit down and have some tea."
Nack gave him a doubting glance.
"Grammar isn't that upsetting."
After they drank a bit, they returned to their lessons, but Dante was too busy trying to convince himself he hadn't been caught to pay any more attention than he had before, and Nack dismissed him less than an hour later. Dante wandered to his cell, napped fitfully through the afternoon, rose and reread the translation of the cycle until Blaze returned from his training with the soldiers. Blaze unbuckled his sword and threw himself down on his pallet, sighing into his pillow.
"I feel the way a club must feel," he said muffledly. "Everything hurts."
"I'm losing my grip," Dante said, double-checking the lock on the door.
"How do you mean?" "They're up to something big. I can't find out what. They almost caught me today."
"Then re-grasp it," Blaze said, wriggling onto his back. "Make a plan already."
"The time isn't right." He heard Blaze snapping straw in the dark.
"And why does it matter what she's up to, exactly?"
"Whatever it is, it's going to distract her," Dante said slowly. He hadn't tried to explain to himself just why the Council's plans were relevant to their own, but he couldn't shake the need to know.
"I think if we take her out then, and she fails, this whole thing might fall apart, break into too many pieces for someone else to put back together."
"Can you find out what it is?"
"Not unless it's dropped in my lap. I can't do any more snooping. It feels like I'm being quartered by my own cross purposes."
Blaze hummed.
"Why don't you just ask them what they're up to?"
"What?"
"For some reason they think you're arrogant and ambitious, right?"
"They do appear to be under that impression," Dante said. Blaze tapped his chin, then went on.
"A man like that wouldn't like feeling left out of the loop, right? You'd demand to know what's going on. You'd say, 'Larimore, tell me what you're up to before I smash this castle down around your head.'
And he'd say, 'Dante, grow the hell up.'"
Blaze shook his head in the gloom of their single candle.
"And you go on to tell him you're being wasted as his errand boy, delivering letters, guarding ambassadors.
That's for servants, not Aron's chosen.
Ask him if they'd have left Will Palomar in the dark."
Dante licked his lips.
"And when he says no, remind him who killed him."
"Exactly."
"I wonder who Will Palomar was."
"Who cares? He was somebody around here, that's clear enough. And you can be damn sure they wouldn't be treating him like a trained bear."
"Just ask them," Dante repeated.
"Really, it'd be suspicious if you didn't. How's this look right now? The first day you barge in here and throw their most prized possession in the dirt like it's a used whore rag, all the while threatening their lives, and 2 weeks later you're bumbling around saying yes sir, no sir, you've got to act like a prick again, for the good of the land."
Dante laughed, buried his face in his rough cotton bedclothes. "If this gets us killed tomorrow, I'm blaming you."
Blaze snorted. "Then when it goes off like a dream, I get all the credit.
No way. I'll be the one that got it done. Based on my brilliant idea. I could have thought of that. But you didn't, Blaze said, lobbing straw at him.
Dante grabbed some from beneath his pallet and threw it back.
You were over there. Woe is me. I'm adrift in a cruel sea. Blaze, won't you be my anchor? Bring me back to shore, Blaze.
That's not what I sounded like, Dante said. Maybe not to your ears, Blaze said. To mine it was all I could do to keep from slapping you.
I'd have turned you into a toad first, then chopped you in half with your own sword. You'd have to turn yourself into a man first so you could actually lift it.
Dante had no answer to that. He closed his eyes and swiftly fell asleep. He brushed Knack off the following morning, and before Larimore could find him and make him play sheepdog to letters and people for another day, he found Larimore. He was in the room of the keep he considered to be his business quarters, drilling a bevy of servants in Gascon.
Dinner. They were talking about dinner, Dante understood.
The particulars of this dinner remained obscure, but Dante felt a faint thrill to know Knack's lessons hadn't been a waste.
I need to talk to you, he called from the doorway to Larimore. Do you want our guests to starve? The man tossed before turning back to his orders.
Dante waited in the frame until Larimore dismissed the servants and waved the boy over. Dante closed the door and took up a chair.
There shall be no mistakes regarding the gravy tonight, Dante said, trying to remember how he'd acted that first day.
Indeed not. I presume you came here for higher reason than mocking the skillful administration of a home this large.
Dante steeled himself.
What's going on here?
Yet another banquet, Larimore said, waving a hand. Fine fare is terribly important when you're a man of noble concerns.
I don't mean dinner, you oaf. What's Samarand preparing for? What's gotten the Citadel so busy?
Oh, that.
Yes, that, Dante said.
Larimore clasped his hands beneath his nose and regarded Dante for a moment.
I wondered when you'd stop skulking around and come see me. I thought, why the secrets? Why is the boy of infinite hubris creeping around like a mouse in the larder?
None of that is any kind of answer.
Well, it's no great secret, Larimore said.
Yes, I know.
Dante leaned back in his chair.
You wish to release Aron.
You see, Larimore said, tipping back his head. Everyone knows.
And rather than involving me in what must be the most important moment in the history of the House of Aron, you believe my time's best spent toting letters and playing wet nurse to fat idiots from faraway lands.
Larimore pressed his hands to his face and chuckled into them, his whole body bobbing with laughter.
Anyone else would have been whipped for that, he smiled.
Dante rolled his eyes.
Do you have any explanations for anything, or does your existence consist entirely of sitting around approving the chef's plans for supper?
I should be so lucky. All right. What is it you wish to do, exactly?
Be involved!
Dante yelled, long past the need to pretend to be frustrated and scornful.
I'm not even in the same sphere as the other students I've seen here. I can help you if you'd let me.
Larimore laughed happily.
You really believe you're a boy of destiny, don't you? You think you're the one in that prophecy you quoted me.
I've made no such claims.
You certainly hinted, implied, and danced around them.
Only to keep the hand of Samarand from strangling me prematurely, Dante said.
He and Larimore looked at each other, surprised, then exchanged a chuckle. Dante rubbed his nose and let the new thought he'd had take its course.
What's so important about the original copy of the cycle, anyway? Aren't the others just as good?
Look, Larimore said, flexing his fingers against each other until they popped. There's no guide written for what we're trying to do. At best, we've got a rough idea of the procedures involved. It's important to reduce uncertainties wherever possible.
Then why did you leave the book lying around in the first place?
Larimore sighed. We didn't.
Yes, but you thought you had,